I thought our offense was fantastic, but we couldn't score.
As an athlete, you lose that reality of real life, and it's not their fault.
If I give some real honest feedback, I'm going to really sound like I'm just whinging here.
We need to get out and really promote our sport, and the powers be, they really need to push it.
Your ticket into the heart of sport. Welcome to the Breakfast Club's Summer Sanctum.
It's nice to have your company wherever you're listening, and nice to have the coach of the Victorian cricket team, Lachie Stevens, with us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Lachie.
Daniel, how are you going?
Going very well, thank you. You've got a busy day ahead.
Long day ahead. So we're watching a one-day game today at the G between our boys and the South Australians.
Is that all that's in play for you today, Lachie?
No, well, I've got a couple of things in play personally, so we'll wait and see what happens. But I hopefully that one can hold for a day or so we can watch the cricket game.
Have you told your wife that perhaps she needs to hold for a day?
No.
Just so it doesn't interfere with the cricket?
Well, I'm sure as everyone here and listeners would know, it would be a brave decision to say that.
So you're due to give birth any time. Your wife's due to give birth any time. Is
that's
what
right.
I'm saying?
Yes.
So what happens if there's, it's a 13th over, they're at the MCG today, Victoria versus South Australia,
right,
and you get the phone call, somebody brings you the phone and says, Locke, it's on. What happens?
I'd better go. They'll be fine. I mean, cricket's an interesting game. It's not like your game where you're making sort of decisions on the day and you're trying to control pace of game or trying to control matchups or things like that. Once the game starts, realistically, I just become their number one supporter. So I can duck off and cheer from the sidelines anyway. So if that phone call does come through, and I hope for Joe's sake it does, that we go to the hospital straight away.
I'm actually pretty free today, so if you need me.
How long did that take? 2 minutes into the interview?
That's an idea, actually, isn't it?
I hadn't even thought about that, Scotty. Our man is all over.
Our man was ahead.
Well, can you explain?
Are you calling? Are you there today?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay, I'm genuinely free.
Lachie, you across his role with the former coach and how close he was, and has he reciprocated it with you?
No, you'll have to update me on how close they actually were.
Well,
are you talking with Ronnie McDonald?
Yes, yep. And before the toss, he'd ask for his advice.
Right.
Battle bowl.
Okay.
You're not offering it to the new guy.
These are conversations that happen off the radio. We don't have those conversations on the radio. Thank you, Scott.
I thought we listened. Our listeners need to know.
Now, you mentioned before about you're watching a game of cricket today, because we've spoken about this, about the role that you see as a coach when it comes to a professional cricket team. Mm. It's very different to what I imagined it would be. And you say sort of, well, the preparation's done. It's up to the players to go and sort of sort it out for themselves.
Yeah. So, it's all different, isn't it? So, you know, you've obviously got a guy on the panel who knows coaching inside out as well.
Yeah.
As you, Scotty.
I'm a leader of men.
But it's different for every coach as it is for every player, and I'm guessing in every sport. Now, I'm not really au fait with every other sport, but watching them, I understand that coaches and listening to coaches, they make decisions on game days. Whereas cricket coaches, I don't think, make that many decisions on game days. But some cricket coaches are far, far more involved in the game than I am. So it all depends on who you've got and what their belief system is. So I'm just really trying to give autonomy to a playing group. And that comes with good and bad things as well. But I'm a big believer in that. It's just important that they learn how to play the game on their terms and they take the game in the direction that they like during the day. So Pete Hanscom or whoever it is, Aaron Finch on the day, whoever the captain is really in charge of that team once sort of warm-up starts.
So what's your role? What's your role not just on game day, but particularly from a situation you have a Shield game that finishes on Friday, a white ball game on Sunday, and then another one today? Just take us through your role in the process that takes place.
Yeah, so at the moment, mine's a little different to Ronnie's in terms of he was also a selector of the side, so I'm not.
Right, okay.
Just because of my role now as an interim role. So in my discussions with Sean Graff and Andrew Lynch and people like that, it was really important for me just to stay a little bit more neutral in terms of the team and let it be guided by other people until they decide what they want to do with the side from a coaching point of view. And I think that's important for the new coach to turn up and go, right, well, here's how I'd like it to run. It's important that I was as neutral as I could be so I can go back and be the assistant coach if that moment comes.
Mm-hmm.
So really for me, the job is now sort of really a mediation role. It's a preparation role for players, making sure they're getting what they need to be ready, and then trying to work out between sports science staff and selection staff and captain, what they'd like to go with leading into the next match.
Lockie, for those out there who don't know your pathway, were you a gun district cricketer, or how did you get down this road to being running our state cricket?
Well, I think, yeah, my pathway was being not very good at anything.
Oh, so I can relate to this.
Yeah, so we can bond over this, Scott, if you like. But I mean, I played cricket for district cricket first grade level. I played for the University of Queensland, so I'm a Queenslander by trade.
Yes,
don't hold that against me.
No, we'll let that go.
Yeah, Sean Graff says that to me on a daily basis. Yeah, so I played sort of. I don't know what it was, maybe 12 years of first grade cricket. And I played a little bit for Queensland. And then what happened was I got delisted from the Queensland side, and I'd also been coaching at the same time. I'd been coaching sort of pathway cricket and district cricket. Oh. And then I'd obviously been in the Queensland second 11 a lot. I didn't play for the top team a lot, but the second 11 sort of academy coach, Trevor Barsby, became the head coach of Queensland the same year I got delisted as a player. And he and I had a good relationship, so he asked me to come and be his assistant coach with the Queensland side, and that was 12 years ago now. So 12 years later, I'm still coaching in domestic cricket in Australia.
What type of player were you?
Average.
No, come on.
Left-hand opening batsman.
Oh, hello. David Warner-ish?
Well, no.
You know that very well, Scotty. Yeah, no.
Left-handed opening batsman.
Scotty's the left-handed opening batsman in our media 11, Lockie.
So, there you go. Yeah. I haven't seen the media 11. I need to.
Oh, Albert Ground in December.
Yeah.
It's the only time you need to get there.
Yeah. But I thought, unfortunately, I thought off stump was leg stump. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's left hand.
As a left hand opening batter, that's not a great error to have.
What players did you come through with that we might know?
Well, so my generation was sort of late 90s through to mid to late 2000s. So all that group in there. I mean, I grew up. In a state squad that was a very good state team because the Australian team was such a good Australian team at that time. So the late 90s was obviously Stephen Moore passing on to Ricky Ponting. So that generation there. So my state side was sort of Matthew Hayden, Martin Love, Stuart Law, Andrew Simons. I'm missing a few there. Jimmy Maher. There was a lot of good players in that side. Michael Kasperitz, Andy Bickle. So they were the sort of players that couldn't quite break into the Australian team because the Australian team was so strong. So my sort of coaching really started in terms of understanding how people played at that level by feeding a lot of balls to Matty Hayden and to Jimmy Maher and those guys because I was in the squad, but obviously I was not anywhere near playing. So I spent my time sort of feeding balls and trying to pitch in around the group.
So from your perspective there, from going to Queensland and then going to WA where you were the senior coach at WA and now coming back and being the coach of Victoria, how different is it now, as you said, you can caretaker role versus at WA where you were the main man?
Well, it's very different. So WA, I was the assistant coach at WA first to Mickey Arthur.
Yep.
Mickey Arthur gave me the job as the assistant coach, and then he left to become the Australian coach. It's not a dissimilar situation in terms of that. But in Western Australia, I accepted the role of head coach, and I thought I really wanted to do it. And I think when you actually do a job, and Daniel will probably be able to talk about this as well as I can, but once you think you want to do a job and then you do a job and you realise that the job is a lot harder or a lot different or far more varied than what you had thought in the first place. So I have great admiration for head coaches in any way, shape or form because what they have to do is so broad and they have to deal with so many different people on so many different levels. And then they are held responsible for how the game plays out on the day, how the team plays and how individuals play within that game. So it's a really difficult role because you are accountable for something that you actually don't have any control over, and then are made to answer it on the side. So, this role here would be quite different. I mean, it's a different team. It's a different setup. I'm far more comfortable in this role now because I've spent nearly 5 years with the guys as well. So it's a really good position for me to be in at the moment and very happy to look after it in the meantime.
The psychology of the interim position, Lockie, for your perspective as the coach, would it be different or if you were the senior coach and the permanent senior coach, do you think? Or is it too hard to answer that question?
I don't think I'd be too different in terms of approach or anything like that. I mean, we've been a pretty laid-back group in terms of how we prepare and things like that. In the last few years, you know, I was here with David Saker and Andrew McDonald, and they both ran it, you know, in terms of how they prep very similarly. So I'd be the same as that. in terms of the interim role, I guess if you were the head coach and a permanent head coach, you'd put more of a stamp on it in terms of selection, and you'd talk to the players about their selection and how they were being viewed and things like that. Whereas I'm not quite at that stage yet, and I'm quite happy not to be at this point in time and wait and see what Andrew Ingleton and Sean Graff want to do at Cricket Victoria with the role moving forward.
And you mentioned before sort of a set and forget type policy on game day. You've done the work and you let the players play from that point in time onwards. Is that, do you think, the way to get the best out of them individually? Is that your philosophy on coaching, that you've set it up, they've trained the system, they know what they need to be doing, but when it's time to perform, that's on them?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's I think if all coaches had the exact answer to that, none of us would ever leave our post, or none of us would ever change or evolve in terms of how we coach. I'm trying to give them autonomy, and I'm trying to give them space to grow. I'm also trying to encourage their own type of errors. So my background in coaching is more of in terms of batting, fielding and skill acquisition. So I'm trying to understand how people learn. That's what I'm really big on. So yep. I'm saying if someone is good at something, then I'm really encouraging them to be very good at that and continue to be good at that and good at that and what's good about what they do. So I'm really, you know, as a skill act person, landing on one side of the equation, whereas on the other side, there's strategy and there's instruction. And I just sort of don't live in that side of coaching. So yep. There's certainly room for that. I just sort of, my brain doesn't go into that space with the players. So all I'm trying to understand about them is why they want to play a certain way, how they move, and how those movements work on a game day with their method. So I'm not sure if that's making too much sense.
Yeah, it's good.
But that's where I'm living. So there's a lot of, there's resources out there and studies out there showing around how brains learn. And a lot of it is kinesthetic, and a lot of it is through reinforcement. So telling someone they're not doing something good on a day, or telling someone to try and do something differently to what they've done, I find rarely works in terms of being effective on game day or throughout people's careers.
Yep. So what's a review process look like for you then? How do you review performances? We've talked a lot about the preparation for a game and let them play, but what happens post? How do you take that that angle?
Well, it changes depending on the game and depending on the scenario. So the last couple of games, as Adam said, we've had a lot of back-to-back cricket. So we've really let people go a little bit in terms of group review. And again, cricket is in a unique space where we're not relying on each other to play the game. So
yeah,
if I'm running a certain line in, I'm going to get this badly wrong because I'm not an AFL person, but if you and I are playing in defence and we have to be on certain people at certain times or running in certain areas of the field, if I'm not doing my job, then I'm letting you down.
Yep.
It doesn't work like that in cricket. If you've bowled the ball and then Scott nicks the ball and then I drop the ball, that's not your fault at all. It's completely on me as a player.
Mm.
So whilst we're combining, and hopefully it's working, it's actually individual skills at that point in time. So reviews take place mostly for me in terms of just conversation with player after event. And in terms of reviews, I'm mostly just listening to them. So
okay. It's
not, you're really hopeful that they understand what they're doing. And some players really understand what's happened and some players aren't quite as sure. So you've got to get to know each player as they go, how they go about it, and try and work from there.
So the extension of that, Daniel, because this is fascinating conversation, I spoke to a few of the players during the game against Queensland after they'd been dismissed, and I sort of said to them, well, what happens? Do you get down and get straight on the computer and have a look at, did your technique fall down? Or you do this, you do that? Does Lockie speak to you as coach and give you a dressing down because you hit the ball in the air? And they sort of say, well, we're told to, sort of taught that we need to work that out for ourselves, because if we can't problem solve out on the field or understand what we've done right or wrong, we're not professional cricketers. We should know that. So the coach's role is more to guide them and help. So you talk to them individually about, what do you want to be as a cricketer? I'll help you get to that point.
Yeah.
And so when they're walking off the field, they already know what they've done wrong. And if they need help, they'll come and ask for it. Does that kind of make sense?
Some will ask for it. Some will like to talk to you about what they're doing and how they've done it. So, I mean, the word that gets thrown around in cricket a lot of the time is technique. And everyone wants to go, well, what's he done with his technique there? And then what a lot of people tend to do is we become Monday morning quarterbacks and we go, well, what's wrong with his technique there? He should have done this. He should have done that. She should have done this. She should have done that. Whereas what I think is more important is looking across a broader spectrum and going, well, how did Adam White play today? Did he move the way he wanted to move? Did he play the types of shots that he wanted to play? And I would suggest 9.5 times out of 10, when they're getting out, it's going to be a mental decision. It's going to be a decision they've made on the shot they've played. It's not a technical thing because everyone's technique is actually different. We speak about technique like it's ensconced and there's one correct way, whereas we actually know in practice that there are thousands and thousands of different techniques within the game. So telling someone that they've made a technical error, I think, is a very dangerous starting point for us. But we tend to go there a lot as coaches, and it's because we see it on television and we hear commentators talking about it, because it's almost the easiest thing to talk about is dissect someone's technique after they're out. But what we don't often do is dissect someone's technique while they're going well.
And that's the beauty of cricket, is that cricket is a series of decisions.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Very much so. How does your grip on that wicket against that bowler affect the shots that you can play at that point in time in the state of the game that's happening? So the variables in cricket are huge. Mm. So as a coach, when people are saying, what are you doing with that player? The answer is very difficult to make black and white. It's a very grey game, but people want black and white answers. Mm. And that's where it's challenging, particularly for head coaches.
20 past seven, it's great insight into the mind of Lachie Stevens, interim coach of the Victorian cricket team. They're in action today at the MCG against South Australia in the Marsh Cup. If you've got some free time on what looks like it's going to be a decent day in Melbourne town as well. We'll continue this conversation after the break. Stick around on The Breakfast Club on RSN 927.
Access all areas. Step into The Breakfast Club's summer sanctum.
23 past seven on a Tuesday morning. The phone hasn't gone off yet. Joe is still waiting at the hospital across the road. But Lachie Stevens is the guest today in the Summer Sanctum. It's great to have him with us, interim coach of the Victorian cricket team. In action today at the MCG against South Australia, Marsh Cup one-day action. The white ball will be flying around. Tell us, you were talking before about skill acquisition, Lachie, and that's more your specialty. Tell us about this young Jake Fraser-McGurk and his skill set that you've seen walking in as a 17-year-old to the men's program.
Yeah, it's exciting to see a young player come in and have a good day first up, isn't it? And he's had a couple of good days.
He's had a couple of good days first up.
Just a naturally talented young man. I don't know if that's the right word, but in amongst that, he works very hard and he hits a lot of balls and he loves hitting balls. So he will just hit and hit and hit until someone tells him to stop hitting. and it's a really nice quality to have, actually. And I've told him a couple of times, and last year he was part of the Melbourne Renegades squad. Yep. As well. Ronnie McDonald got him in there, which shows how aware of the game Ronnie is, that he got him in as a 16-year-old, because he could see that he was going to be, an effective player. He bats, bowls and fields, and obviously he's just got tremendous hand speed through the ball and tremendous hand eye to go with it. So it'll be exciting to watch him, today, and good to watch him grow, hopefully, over the next 10 to 15 years.
Are there many kids of that age in the last couple of years in your time in the Victorian system anyway that have had the potential to be this good at this age? Or is it something that seemingly comes more with, obviously more with time, but have there been many prodigy sort of talents floating around?
Each state's got some really good young players. I guess it just depends when you blood them and how you use them and those sorts of things. And there's no right or wrong answer. It just might depend on opportunity inside. So Jake got an opportunity this week. There was a really good chance Mackenzie Harvey, a young left-hander, would have made his Shield debut, but Mackenzie Harvey had broken his hand. So, timing is a wonderful thing as well. And Jake had been going not so well in district cricket, but he'd made 100 in a second 11, and then he made an 80 in front of the selectors, I think a day or two before the side was actually selected.
Right.
So his timing was wonderful, and he got an opportunity. And Adam's probably met him, and he's a very confident young man, and full of youthful exuberance and no fear. And he's had an opportunity, and he's played some fantastic shots, and I'm sure some people have taken note. But I mean, we've had some good young players come through at young ages. Will Bukowski is still only, what's Will, 20. He's not 21 yet. Mm. So, he debuted 3 years ago as well, 3 seasons ago. So there's people out there who have done it, Nair and Sanger and Edwards up in New South Wales. WA have blooded some young people over the last 5, 6, 7 years. Even when I was there, we were blooding some younger players, an 18-year-old Marcus Harris. Chris Green now in the game for them is a fantastic young talent. So there's some tremendous young players out there, and it's good to see them getting some opportunity.
Look, you mentioned the opportunity has also come arise because you've had 3 players in your squad who've taken time off with mental illness. What's it like from a coach's perspective to deal with that?
Well, it's a really interesting question and probably a difficult one to give a good answer to, because they're all choose time away from the game for different reasons, and it gets put under the sort of column or banner of mental health. And all three of them are very different. I haven't actually spoken to Glenn Maxwell since it happened. So he's just having some time to himself and trying to recuperate in his own way. I've spoken to Will and to Nick Maddison, and they're very different people and have very different issues and perspectives around what's going on. So as a coach, it's been interesting to watch, I guess, and it creates opportunities for new people to come into the side. And what you hope is that all three of them can come back to the game in their own way and be, you know, relaxed enough to play. It's good that they're able to talk about it. And hopefully they can come back and just enjoy the game for the way it's meant to be enjoyed, which does get harder and harder, and cricket is a brutal sport in many ways and an isolating sport in many ways. So you can see why it can happen to players over time.
Are either of them a chance for the next Shield game? It's a little gap.
I think, so it's next Friday. So it is a good space between today's one-day game and the next Shield game. So Nick Maddison, we're hoping, will be back for St Kilda this weekend, his grade side, and hopefully after that he makes himself available for selection. Will, I'm not as sure about. I think he's going to come back to training in the next day or so, and we'll go from there in terms of how he feels about it and the reports we get back from our sports science department.
The James Pattinson situation was one that caught a lot of people by surprise because it sort of emerged after the match happened. Did you speak to James? I know James has got quite upset about how it's all played out. It's a difficult one to talk about as well.
Back to the mental health question?
Yeah, what happens in that situation as a coach and the player? Because James is someone that plays well on the edge, but we all know about this line we talk about in Australian cricket. How did that all unfold?
Yeah, well, I mean, firstly, from my point of view, I don't understand the line. I don't know the line. It gets talked about a lot. I don't like that Australia talk about the line and that we are owners of the line. It's always been an interesting concept for me. I don't understand that at all, so I'm not educated enough to give you an answer on that. The incident's taken place. It's come out in the press. What I do know is that Jimmy was immediately remorseful about what he did. He can play the game aggressively, and he can be play the game with emotion. And some of the reasons that he's made the mistake are some of the reasons that you absolutely love him as a player. But no one condones what happened. And I think Tim Payne came out and said that, you know, he's let his teammates down, and he has. And he'd let himself down, but he was immediately remorseful, and you know, hopefully he can learn from that, because we love him in our side, and we love him in the game, and we want to keep guys like that in the game because they're exciting to watch and they're great cricketers to have as a part of a Victorian side or an Australian side or a Big Bash side with the Heat. Wherever he is, he's exciting, and that's what we want our players to be known for, is how they play the game. So it's a shame when these incidents happen, but I do know that he did regret it.
It's a difficult one for James, because when he's wound up, he doesn't just bowl well himself, but he makes everyone else walk taller because of that intensity that he creates. And I often talk about him being like John Bon Jovi, you know, he gets out there and and makes everyone really excited around him. So it's a really difficult one with James because of that. No one condones what he said, but just that whole thing of getting himself fired up.
Yeah, he makes the game exciting, doesn't he? Sometimes cricket can be long and drawn out, and he doesn't play like that at any stage. You know, he can't not give everything he has in a contest. It doesn't matter how sore he is or how tired he is or how frustrated he is. He just comes back and goes at 100% every time he has the ball, every time he's involved in a fielding. He loves that contest, I guess. And you're right, he does make players walk taller. I mean, Victoria have had some successes in the last 5 years. And there's no coincidence that there's a correlation between when he's been fit and playing the back half of years and Victoria winning titles. Mm-hmm. Because he's, firstly, a better player than Shield level. He's an international quality bowler. He just doesn't get the opportunities, A, through injury, and B, because the trio of bowlers that Australia have had in the last 5 years have been amazing. But he is a high, high quality first-class player. So, I'd much rather be talking about his cricket, because he is a fantastic cricketer and everyone around the country knows it, and he does drag teams with him and he wins matches.
No doubt about that. We were talking this morning, Lockie, about players in cricket, dealing with the pressure and expectation of jumping a level. And we were talking about the Shield to the international level, domestic to international level this morning, and how challenging that seemingly is for a lot of batsmen, particularly at the moment in Australian cricket.
Yeah.
Can you coach an ability to deal with that, or is that something that's innate, do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think you can coach that. I think it goes back to what we talked about before the break, where they get exposed on such a huge level when they become an international player. Mm. It's probably like a VFL footballer becoming an AFL footballer, and all of a sudden everyone can watch their technique and rip them apart bit by bit. So as soon as there's some failures, you know, there's questions over they're not good enough, or this isn't good enough, or and how they go. And that pressure builds through media, and that leads and filters into, you know, coaching setups and selections, and we all start to talk about it because it's the easiest thing to talk about. So Peter Hanscom is my perfect example for that. Three years ago when he played Pakistan?
Mm-hmm.
He had an unusual technique. He sat deep in his crease. He looked to play back more often than get forward, and he cut Pakistan to ribbons and made test hundreds. And then a year later in an Ashes series, for a whole range of different reasons, you know, Broughton Anderson bowled beautifully at him. Mm. He struggled a little bit. And then all of a sudden we ripped his technique apart and he wasn't good enough. And he's had 2 years of reconstruction and rehabilitation and fighting himself and all the things that come with that. And I think, you know, we're actually quite damaging to our young batters when they go to the next level. So the question is, how do you deal with it? I don't know. It's a very difficult one, but you need people around them who get them to trust themselves and be okay with themselves. And then you need selections that remain consistent to allow players to grow into things. So it's a very difficult line for everyone in that industry to walk.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. Selection needs to remain consistent. That's probably the key out of that.
That's what we were talking about this morning
that seemingly that's one of the challenges from a national selection panel's perspective, that how do they deal with it? You're dealing with the Australian team, you've got batsmen around the country at the domestic level who are firing, and you've got these talented players at the highest level that aren't.
Yeah.
And so how long do you stick?
Yeah.
What do you do? I mean, the formula for that, if you could master it, would be unbelievably valuable.
Yeah, I mean, who would be a selector?
Yeah.
It is such a difficult... So, and it's the easiest thing for us to do and for everyone outside of the team to do is rip apart selectors as well as players. You know, I couldn't do Trevor Hines' job in 1,000 years. It's so, so difficult because selection's not... Everyone just wants it to be about runs or wickets, or someone else wants it to be about technique, or someone else wants to talk about a temperament of a player or how hard he trains. And there's so many different columns and so many different opinions. It is a brutal job.
It is, but we wish you the best of luck with your job today, coaching Victoria, of course, South Australia at the MCG, the first ball being bowled at 10 a.m. in the Marsh Cup, the white ball version of domestic cricket. Wish you the best with that, and of course, with the impending birth as well. Lucky, nice to have you in the studio.
Thanks, Daniel. Thanks
for
having
me on. We've got to get Lucky back in, I think.
Yep, we've got a lot to talk about.
How good was that?
We've got a lot to talk about. Great to have the insight on the coach of the Vicks with us.